Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Marius Ruart. Let's get stuck into the news of today. And the first thing is a statement by Cyril Ramaphosa, the president in the National Council of Provinces, where he has promised a review of Black economic empowerment. Now, what does this mean? So he put his remarks in a tweet, which went up online, and I'm going to be quoting bits from that, although this is just a copy of what he said in the NCOP. It starts off with this very lengthy defense of BEE, saying our commitment to Black economic empowerment as expressed through various policy documents and statements remains steadfast. The Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act remains a fundamental lever for transformation as part of our broader strategy to achieve more rapid, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth in the country. As I've said before, we must disperse with a false notion that we must make a choice between growth and transformation. Black economic empowerment is not only compatible with investment and growth, but is essential to achieve broad-based growth and prosperity. So that's what the president said. So when I first started reading this, I thought, okay, well, what's the big deal? But about halfway through this lengthy defense of BEE comes the word, however. It says, however, despite the progress that has been made across a range of measures, we can do better. As with any policy, we must constantly assess whether we are achieving our goals and where we can make improvements. The Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition is therefore considering a review of broad-based Black economic empowerment measures to align with government priorities of ensuring industrialization, inclusive growth, localization, and facilitating access to finance for emerging enterprises. The purpose of the review will be to improve the effectiveness of triple BEE implementation, address gaps in implementation, set timelines, and provide strong linkages between triple BEE and industry policies. We need to ensure our BEE policies support inclusive growth, just as we need to ensure our growth supports transformation. Our task is to strengthen BEE to ensure it works effectively in promoting the participation of Black people in our economy, not to abandon it. So why are we talking about this? One view, Maurice, is that this is more of the same. He's doubling down on BEE. He's saying we're not going to abandon it. He's responding to all the public criticism of BEE that's come about in recent years and in recent weeks and months by saying, no, well, you see, we're just going to do it better. This has been a promise of many political so-called reformers in South Africa over the past couple of years, is we're just going to do BEE better. We're going to do it this time, but without the corruption or something to that effect, right? That's one view. The other view is that the ANC is extremely wedded to BEE, but its senior leadership is beginning to realize that without some kind of change, without economic growth, which BEE is helping to hold back, there will not be any recovery in their fortunes and the ANC will lose its control of the country. And that the only way to actually get policy through the government of national unity and to actually start growing the economy is to soften BEE. In other words, is this review a doubling down, a strengthening of BEE's place in the economy, as the president seems to suggest in this piece, or is the subtext here that this is the thin end of the wedge, at which point BEE will begin to fall away in legislation? Maurice, I think it's a bit of an open question. I tend towards this being a tactical retreat in response to the attacks on BEE, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Do you think this is something meaningful, or should we not get our hopes up quite yet?
I think it can possibly be both, as you were saying before the show. It's all about the balance of forces with the ANC. They often take two steps backwards and then one steps forward. So you think you've got them on the back foot, but they've actually, as you say, it's a tactical retreat. But sometimes when an army thinks it's making tactical retreat, then it allows the opponents to regroup and secure a beachhead or foothold in enemy territory. And then things can change pretty quickly from that. But I think overall, I mean, would the president have said something like this two or three years ago? I'm not so sure. But also, I think what's quite interesting here is that he doesn't talk about how the ANC is doing this or whatever. He says the government of national unity is committed to translate the values of the Constitution into practice with a focus on the achievement of social justice, redress, and equity, which is all, I mean, just, you know, just empty rhetoric, really. It's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything. But, you know, if we also, if we can actually change the definition of what black economic empowerment is, that would maybe also be a good idea. Maybe if we decide black economic empowerment is when you actually have actual reductions in the poverty rate and the unemployment rate, because in this country, the majority of people are black. So when something happens for South Africans, that's happening for black people, in generally speaking. So maybe we actually have to define, when we talk about black economic empowerment, we talk about South African economic empowerment. And when you are seeing economic growth of 5%, that is black economic empowerment, because black people are also going to benefit from economic growth. But I think I've mentioned on the show before, I mean, I tweeted a little while ago saying that I think if you had, like, if a genie came and said to the ANC, look, if you get rid of all these, like, policies like NHI and BE and blah, 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 what have you, I guarantee that you'll have 5% economic growth a year until whenever. Many people in the ANC would say, no, it's fine. We don't want that. And it was actually very enlightening seeing lots of replies to my tweet. Obviously, a lot of people like, yes, this is a great idea. A lot of people like, we don't want that. We want redress. We want BE. And people would basically, if I said, so you would choose between, you would rather have BE than 6% economic growth. And people would basically say, yes, that's what they want. And it's very obvious. You can't have any actual redress anyway without a growing economy. You can't keep slicing up a pie that's staying the same size or actually shrinking if you look at per capita levels. You feel like you're insane. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing expecting a different outcome, because it's so obvious. The best way to improve people's lives is economic growth. You can't take from the haves and expect as Abraham Lincoln said, you can't strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. And that's exactly what BE and various redress policies do. They simply don't work. But yeah, overall, maybe this is, I think then we just have to keep pushing. I think this is a result of pressure coming from civil society, including ourselves, and coming from overseas governments, and coming from private sector businesses. I think all this together has possibly led us to this point. And I think we have to seize this, the nettle while we can. And yeah, I think we just have to keep hammering on this, because it's clear BE doesn't work.
No, I think it's important that you bring up the definitions again. We've talked about transformation being a term that has been loaded to mean, you know, ensuring demographic representativity, when what it should mean is changing our society from a poor, dysfunctional, and unequal one to one that is successful, thriving, prosperous, and forward-looking. But black economic empowerment is also, it's a term that is being essentially used to describe handing off shares of companies to wealthy, connected individuals. But if you wanted to actually economically empower most black South Africans, abolishing BE policy would do it. So in a sense, yeah, no, we haven't tried black economic empowerment yet, because the policies we have do not economically empower black people. They empower a small group of politically connected people. So I do think it's, you know, if the government is going to, shall we say, change some of these definitions so that they can look like they haven't retreated when they actually have, that would be good. But considering Ramaphosa's track record, I would say I remain very skeptical so far as to whether this is not just another doubling down of an organization which seems incapable of making any sort of real change to how it goes. So the devil will be in the details. We'll have to see what this review produces.
I just want to relate one anecdote quickly. I was at a conference once, and there was an Indian guy talking about how India's got very similar policies, and they like put, you know, say these things are pro-poor and they're actually very bad policies. And anything is in the, as long as you frame it as being for the poor. And he said basically you'd have all these upper class twits who are pushing for petrol subsidies, because who benefits from petrol subsidies? Not a poor guy who's pulling a rickshaw or pulling a wheelbarrow with these vegetables to get to the markets, whatever. It's people who can afford vehicles. He said, like, all these upper class twits were pushing for what they call pro-poor policies. And obviously nobody wants to say, oh, they're actually not pro-poor, we're against the poor. So I think this is very similar. All these upper class twits who are pushing for policies that actually only benefit the connected and, the elite, broadly speaking, than actually poor people.
Good point. All right, let's move to Joburg now. Where there has been, so the story we're drawing from here was written just before the motion of no confidence, as well as the motion of no confidence tabled by the DA in the ANC mayor of the city, Dara Marrero. Contrary to my expectations, Action SA announced that they would, well, they weren't going to support the motion of no confidence. I guess I was right about that, but they weren't going to back the ANC government either. They basically seem now to have fallen out with the ANC in Joburg, saying that they would abstain from the vote, that while they thought that Dara Marrero had done a poor job, they didn't want to be involved in, what is the exact phrasing? The scheming approach of the DA. So they weren't going to support the motion of no confidence. So Dara Marrero has survived the motion of no confidence. It looks like with Action SA sitting out on the sidelines, the IFP, ANC, EFF, and some of them are very small parties all kind of backed the same, or all backed Dara Marrero, so he's safe in his seat. The ANC may take revenge on the Speaker of Council, who is a member of Action SA. So she may be voted out. And Action SA has promised big consequences if the ANC retaliates now against the Action SA mayor of Tswane. Marius, is the coalition between Action SA and the ANC doomed in Gauteng? And if it is, why do you think so?
Well, I think it's probably doomed because Action SA is really a hopeless organization, I think. I think it's led by a man who really has very little strategic vision. And I think it's also led by they're very dishonest people in its top leadership. Not all the people. I think somebody like, I've said this before, I think somebody like Athol Trollope is quite a good person. And, you know, I met him once and I thought he was a good guy. But I think somebody like Michael Beaumont is, I really have no respect for people like him who are very dishonest. So in September last year, he put out a tweet that said, this is the service delivery record in the city of Tshwane that some people think Action SA should have defended and kept in office 2024. So this is he claims to have released, there'd been a poll where they claim to have asked people in Tshwane what they thought of service delivery. So the question is that he shared here. Do you think that service delivery in the city under the DA-led coalition government has gotten better, worse, or more or less stayed the same? But if you look at what the answers are, they don't make sense to what the question is. It says right direction, wrong direction, and don't know. So I've tweeted now Michael Beaumont probably 10 times. This tweet came out in September last year, maybe more than 10 times. Just saying to him, Michael, what is the methodology? How did you contact these people? And who did the survey for you? He hasn't blocked me or anything on Twitter, but he's never answered. And I think this is incredibly revealing, especially considering before last year's election, they came out saying that polls need to be regulated and so on. They can be used for nefarious purposes and so on. And I think there's some merit to that argument, actually. But you can't then use the exact same tactics and not... He could shut me up very quickly and say, yeah, it was the methodology, Morris. This is who did it. And then I would look quite foolish by, you know, having go at him all the time. But he hasn't done that. And I think it's incredibly telling about what kind of organization Action SA is. You know, we're not saying everybody in politics needs to be these paragons of virtue, but at least have a tiny bit of integrity. Probably a tiny bit, consistent in your views and the way you act. And I think this is incredibly telling about Action SA. They really don't know what they're doing. And it's a real pity because I think they had real potential, you know, a party that were drawing all the ANC voters and at least ostensibly at face value was for things like non-racialism and the free markets and so on. And I think in the next local government election, whether it's in 2026 or 2027, I think Action SA is going to it's going to do very badly. I think I'd be very surprised if it does get anywhere close to the same level of support that it got in 2021.
I think they're probably not headed for great success. We'll see. But I think that this decision to kind of break from the ANC in Joburg is very possibly being driven by that realization that the party cannot be associated with misgovernance of Joburg, which has been going on. And, you know, if you ask Action SA, they'll say, we're not in coalition with the ANC in Joburg. But I think that's a very charitable interpretation. You know, yes, they weren't in coalition, but they were basically supporting it in kind of like almost a spy and confidence arrangement. So it's probably politically wise for them to at least abstain from this vote. Although, you know, I do kind of question, like, you don't have to love the DA to support the motion of no confidence if you have no confidence in the mayor. it just It seems sort of, I think that's quite sort of emblematic of the sort of strategic problem that they've had, which is, you know, while I think there's a lot of people in Action SA who are not super fond of the ANC, there seems to be also this just absolutely visceral personal hatred between many members of Action SA and the DA. Well, which makes sense because a lot of Action SA is essentially a breakaway from the DA.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of it just comes down to personal animosity. And yeah, I don't think what's being done is in the best residents, best interests of the residents and so on. I mean, even look how the Action SA has acted, you know, how they acted before the budget vote as well. It's all about trying to get one up on the DA. It's not trying to do what's best for the country or various municipalities where it's in government or where it has councillors.
All right, so speaking of coalitions, let's talk about our last story, which is that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which is run by Dylan Corsini Hlabisa from the IFP, is pushing to finalize and pass into law the Coalitions Bill ahead of the 2026 local government election. The department is locked in talks to see if a bill submitted, I think, by the ANC on reforming coalitions in the country and a bill submitted by the DA could be kind of combined into one document. The idea of this is to change the way our next local government elections work to avoid some of the problems that happened when, for example, the Government of National Unity was formed and there was this extremely tight timeline to get everything, you know, sorted and put into place. There is also talk of a threshold which will prevent very small parties from getting a seat in council. You'll need above a certain percentage in order to get a seat. That can be kind of useful for preventing, you know, sort of endless fragmentation of the political situation, but it can also be an anti-democratic measure. I mean, it is an anti-democratic measure, but it can also be a very negative one that's used to exclude very small parties kind of unfairly. Marius, what do you make of the bill? And I mean, who knows if it's actually going to get passed, but you know, what do you think needs to be done in the way we do coalitions?
Yeah, the issue of thresholds is a tricky one. I think it's fair to say that a party needs to demonstrate a certain level of support to be able to be represented in a legislature. A lot of countries around the world do it. You know, in New Zealand and Germany, you have to get at least 5% of the vote to get a seat in parliament. In Israel, I think it's 3.25%. I think that kind of level would be too high in South Africa. I think maybe 1% or even 0.5% would be, you know, I think be acceptable. But, you know, I'm not wed at the idea. I think, like as you say, it could maybe be seen as anti-democratic. But there's other things that you could do, I think, that could make coalitions a bit more stable, limiting the number of motions of no confidence that a party can that can be passed in a year on a mayor, for example, or having some way of making coalition agreements at least legally binding for a six-month period, for example, or for a year to ensure that governments are pretty stable. You could also have a kind of a threshold where a party can only get the mayoralty or get a seat on the mayoral committee if it's got more than, say, 10 or 15% of the vote. And that would make sure you couldn't have these really small parties acting as kingmakers. They could get, I mean, other kinds of benefits, I know, sitting on a, you know, being chair of a committee or something, but not necessarily being on the mayoral committee. So yeah, there's ways I think we can do it. And but also all this is just part of South Africa's democratic growing pains. You know, with our electoral system, this proportional representation, we were always going to get to a point where the country itself and lots of provinces and municipalities are having to be governed by coalitions. And we're in that place now. I think after the last local government election, I think a third of our municipalities were governed by coalitions. Next year, I wouldn't be surprised if more than half of our municipalities will be governed by coalitions. And probably, you know, outside of in Cape Town, probably it's quite likely that all the metros except for Cape Town maybe will be governed by coalition. And even Cape Town, there's probably a chance that the DA could slip under 50%. So yeah, I think we need to start trying to work out how we can, you know, govern with coalitions. But also it comes down to how mature political parties are. I mean, that's part of the problem in South Africa. I think a lot of our political parties haven't grappled with the reality that we're in this situation where we're going to be in coalitions a lot of the time. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff we can do. And another thing that I think would be a good idea is to give councils, and this is also something we can ramp up to national level, more time to form a government. At the moment, this is something would have, the constitution would have to change. After an election, whether it be a city council or parliament or provincial legislature, only has 14 days to elect a premier and to elect a speaker, so to basically form a government. And in countries around the world where coalitions are common, there's much longer time for this. I mean, in Germany, it's normally about 3 months before governments formed after an election. I think Belgium had the record where it was 500 days before government formed. And if you speak to Belgians, they'll tell you this was really a golden period for the country, where there was no government and things were going, you know, there was beer was falling out the heavens and cats and dogs were getting on. And, you know, there was all, it was summer every day. So, but yeah, I don't know if that would be the case. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's definitely something we have to look at.
Yes, I do worry that if our civil service was left to its own devices, we might not quite get the same result as the Belgians got. If you're a political nerd and you're interested in seeing kind of crazy parliamentary systems where they've fragmented to an insane degree, go and look at the parliamentary results in Brazil or in Iraq. In Iraq, the largest political party gets only 10% of the vote. You can kind of almost see a future in South Africa where we do have a situation like this, let's say 30 years from now, where there is no dominant party. I don't think we'll get there, but it's something to consider that when you have a very proportional system like we do, if there aren't changes made, you may have very significant fragmentation of the political situation. Some good things about that, but there's also a lot of downsides as well. But anyway, yeah, interesting stuff. And when there actually is more formal, you know, formal piece of legislation, I think we will definitely have a lot more to say about this. Anyway, we've gone long, so thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show today. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.